Because here we are. We go into the weight room and everything is bilateral. Everything is sagittal plane. I squat with both feet under my hips on the ground. I deadlift, both feet on the floor, both hands on the barbell. You know, I just, there's a lot of things. And anything that I do that's less than the bench, the squat or the deadlift, is kind of seen as a quote unquote auxiliary lift. It's kind of an accessory. It's not the main lift. So when I go do lunges, it's like, yeah, that's kind of like an extra exercise, but the squat is the big exercise that day. Cheesy intro line in 3, 2, 1. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Fitness Lying Down podcast, where I'm your host and owner extraordinaire, Corey Kripe. So, yeah, Merry Christmas, everybody, because I know that's coming up very shortly. And from us at Fitness Lying Down to all our valued listeners, we appreciate all you've been doing, your support. It's been great watching the numbers grow over these last couple years. So today, maybe it's holiday related. I want to talk about sports. So of course, you know, Thanksgiving, it's always the football. Christmas time, there's maybe some football around there. I don't know, but we all kind of gather and watch sports. But what I want to discuss today is sports performance training. So not to get confused with like what we would call athletic training, which sounds like, oh, you're training athletes. No, athletic trainers, I kind of joke, are like official taper upper peoples. So I think that their label is a little bit misconceiving, almost like fitness lying down, little deceiving, little deception. But I'm talking about sports performance training. So for a lot of us in the industry, we kind of were drawn to fitness because of sports. We use strength training to build up our bodies so that we could be better in our sports, myself included. And kind of want to talk about that a little bit because, you know, I think the evolution of fitness, the evolution of strength training, the evolution of strength and conditioning, which I would say strength conditioning would be in that sports performance training. So when I went to college many, many years ago, this was my ultimate goal, was to become a strength coach for an athletic team, sports team. And I had my internship, right? I had my internship with the Chicago Bulls strength conditioning staff. So I got to see firsthand how strength coaches program and coach professional athletes on the training floor. Very cool, very cool. And, you know, so I actually had my master's program. It was all set up. I was going to go to Logan, Utah, to Utah State University. And I don't know if cold feet would be the word, but had a girlfriend here in Wisconsin that I figured, you know, I don't want to go to Utah because I kind of want to put my eggs in this basket. And as I like to say, I'm very glad I did because it's been 20 years of marriage so far, and I think I put my eggs in the right basket there. However, just thinking about athletes, you know, back in the day before weights were really a big thing, you know, where the weight room would be where you expect athletic teams to go, most of the athletes were very multidimensional. They played multi-sports, right? They were doing baseball, doing basketball, doing football, doing cross country, doing track, doing volleyball, doing, you know, all these different sports. So they never specialized. And even the older athletes back in the day, that's what they did too. They would work manual labor jobs. And like, I'm thinking about the professional athletes, you know, they would get done with their season. They would go to work. There was no off season. They didn't get paid to train and to build their bodies and to continue crafting their sport. So when it comes to that, I think one of the biggest places where we get wrong is specializing youth athletics. You know, we see a 10-year-old who can throw a football, a baseball, who can shoot a basketball very well. And we put them in that sport, and then we're like, you got to stay in the sport. You got to do everything you can to specialize in the sport. But we're taking a prepubescent child. And so once they mature, you know, once they go through puberty, their bodies change. They might not have that athleticism that they once did, or vice versa. You might have a kid prepubescent who's not a very good athlete, myself. And then you hit puberty, and you change. And now you might have more coordination. You're more athletic. So it's really dangerous to look at some of these young athletes and say, this is going to be the next so-and-so. This is going to be the next Michael Jordan. This is going to be the next Mark McGwire. I don't, you know, whatever the professional athlete is, Nolan Ryan. And to make that athlete specialize in that sport at that period of time. So big disservice there. And I'm saying all of this because I have a son who does play sports, and now he's going to be a freshman in high school in 2024. And he's planning to play football. He's planning to play basketball. And, you know, they're driving the weight room on the kids. And I have no problem with weight room. So what I want to make clear right now is that even though, yes, the DVRT system we're using here, this is what I hold true as almost gospel, but does free weights, does barbell exercises help? I'm going to have to say yes, because it helped me. It helped me grow stronger. But I don't know if that necessarily helped me on the field. Because one thing, and I feel like my brain is going to be scattered all over, is the one of the biggest mistakes we can make as strength coaches is to try to mimic the sport in the weight room. All right. So if like we're doing a throwing thing and to bring them into the weight room and try to do a throwing thing, that's the field. That's the sport that they need to be. That's the drills that they should be doing in practice. Our job. Now, here's what I'm thinking about. Our job, especially for the younger athletes, because I do think the youth can benefit from resistance training, strength training. But I don't think that barbells should be included in a lot of these youth programs. Number one, for the prepubescent, they're not ready to handle those kind of loads on their body. To actually put a 45-pound bar on top of a prepubescent's shoulders, that changes their squat pattern dramatically. Their body has to compensate because they're not prepared for this. And on the flip side, doing body weight exercises, now I'm not saying that there's anything wrong per se, but I'm going to say that body weight exercises are more intense than a loaded exercise. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean that especially somebody prepubescent doesn't have that body awareness. So you tell them to do a squat and they squat down and the squat's not very good. You know, I mean, they get some depth, but maybe their spine rounds a little bit and maybe the knees collapse in. So if I got, let's say, an ultimate sandbag, and we can do a press out squat, now what am I doing? I'm enhancing their movement pattern. I'm making it so it becomes a little bit more dialed in. The load is there, yes, for a little bit of resistance, but it's mainly there for feedback. So they can use those feedback purposes to gain a better squat. Same as when we go to hip hinges, putting the bag in the front loaded position. Whereas having a young person deadlift a barbell is probably not going to be the best solution because they're not ready. They don't even know the hinges. These kids nowadays, they're not as active as once were. You know, they're more active on their phones than they are physically doing things. So to say, hey, I want you to bend over, pick this bar up and, you know, put it back down, pick it back up. And it could be a recipe for disaster. Let's just say that. But if I'm using more of the feedback tools, the ultimate sandbags, I could still use kettlebells. I can use resistance bands. What am I doing? I'm teaching. I'm teaching the youth. I'm teaching these young athletes how to move better. And I'm setting the foundation. So we take these kids that don't even have the foundation and we start putting them under a barbell. Like, hey, I want you to bench press this. Like, they can't even bench press a 45-pound bar. And I say that because I was one of those kids. I was so discouraged because I was not even strong enough to lift the bar. That I'm, for any other kid, that'd be like, well, if I can't even do this, maybe this is not for me. There was something about my hard-headedness that is like, well, I want to get better at this, so what can I do? Think about a young person with a push-up. How does that look? You know, again, I'm thinking about my young son, my 13-year-old son. His push-ups, not very quality, but as we try to clean it up a little bit, but we have better answers. Instead of just trying to do more and more push-ups to get better at a push-up that they can't even perform, we can do different things. We can teach them first about bird dog positions. So putting them in that quadruped position, using an ultimate sandbag, learning how to use your hands and feet, and then elevating that into more plank exercises before, you know, maybe we're doing push-ups now because of the hands and the feet are working. There's more connections in the body. So in essence, we're physical educators as strength coaches for the youth. We're teaching the youth in the weight room. So again, on the field, they have to learn the drills. They have to learn the skills of the sport that they're practicing for. But in the weight room, we need to teach them how to be better movers. And a lot of that movement, sure enough, is going to be in the one dominant plane of movement that we use in the weight room, that being the sagittal plane. So we're looking at forward and backward, up and down. So teaching and then using the movement patterns. We need to take those movement patterns and apply that to the youth's training to get them better in a squat, to get them better in a hinge, in a lunge, pushing, pulling, rotation. And then, you know, most importantly, the gait pattern. Now, I'm not asking that we take kids and give them heavy kettlebells and tell them to walk with it, but there are ways that we can have them become more efficient movers in a walk pattern, gait pattern. And then as they elevate through, so they start hitting puberty, well, now the training can advance a little bit more. They've got that foundation. Now we can maybe start increasing that load so we can get that stimulus, so we can get more response from the body, that it has to be more strength training as we know it. Doesn't necessarily mean, again, that I'm putting barbells on people, that I'm having them bench press, that I'm having them pick up barbells off the floor. I just think here we have such an opportunity to now take those that sagittal plane that we built into the youth, into the young athletes, and now we can start moving into different planes of motion. So as they're growing and maturing, the program can grow and mature with them. It doesn't need to be, hey, because I think the one thing that we keep falling back on is, you know, having the max out day, the PR day. So like what can you do one time? Or maybe what weight can you do three times max? I think those days need to go away in athletics, in more of those team sports. Now, if you're training as a power lifter, then probably you're going to need those days. But I'm just talking about more of the general popular sports that we know, the football, basketball, baseball, track, volleyball. And I don't think we need PR days anymore. You know, I think that there can be ways that we can make the training cycles go so that through the summer and all that, we're hitting a little bit harder, the off season, whatnot. But then as we get closer to the season, we're starting to tailor back a little bit. And then in season, again, with the DVRT principles, this makes it so effortless that in season, how we can change the volume, how we can change the intensity of the drill. So instead of doing something in a very complex plane of motion or with a hard, difficult holding position or in a body position that's a little more challenging, we can start scaling that back a little bit. Maybe instead of a front-loaded squat, we can go do a nice bear hug squat. Just get some of that good core stability, some good hip mobility, things like this. So it doesn't have to be max out day. And of course, as the athletes continue to mature and grow, well, weights can get heavier. Planes of motion can become a little bit more complex. We can start moving into flows, more things that have to deal with coordination. Because let's be honest, prepubescent kids, if we try to do anything coordinated, like a flow, a multi-movement exercise, 9 times out of 10, they're not going to be able to perform it very well because they're not very coordinated. So that's what we're doing. You see what I'm saying here is that we need to build them into that coordination so that when they become a collegiate athlete, that all of a sudden they have a really articulate way of expressing themselves movement-wise. They're very movement literate, and we can have a little more fun with this as we create more strength. Now, what is strength once again? So a couple weeks ago, I was at my mom's for her Christmas party. And my brother, my younger brother, who is quite the athlete, had a son, and his son's 17, and he's quite the athlete as well, just an animal on the field. And we're talking about lifting weights, being strong. And I said to him, I'm like, well, okay, well, tell me, what's strong? And his go-to was, well, I mean, it's how much you can bench. It's like, okay, so we're using one exercise to dictate strength for everybody. He's like, well, no, then it's like, what can you squat? And then as he was going about the next one, I'm like, oh, and then what you can deadlift, right? And he's like, yeah, the kind of those big three exercises. I'm like, so you're going to say that the strength that you have for playing a sport, your sport being football, but any sport, the strength is going to be measured by those three exercises. And he was just kind of like, you know, and I didn't want to grill the kid because he's 17. I'm not. This is my field of expertise. It's not his. And I said, I would say the stronger person is the one that moves better, moves more efficiently. And, you know, he kind of thought about it a little bit. And so the funny thing is that his dad, my brother, sitting next to him, my brother's scheduled to have like hip surgery. Now, yes, it is genetic, but my brother's also been really hard on his body with athletics. So he's at a point right now, and he's younger than me. He's like 5 years younger than me. He's at a point right now where it's really difficult for him to do any kind of exercises, where it's for him to move and not be in pain is a little bit troublesome. And here I am, 5 years older, and I move well. not to brag, but I move well. So when I said, I think the stronger person is going to be the one that moves better, you can see him really nodding his head, my brother, because he's like, yeah, that makes sense. Because he would give anything to not be in pain, to move better right now. And it's just, I think we appreciate this, especially as we're older. You know, high school kids, we're not thinking about that. I wasn't thinking about how well I moved. I was just thinking about how much weight can I put on the barbell and lift. And it is so hard to get away from that mentality. It is just so hard. And I think the thing that really confirms my bias is myself included, but so many of our clients were former athletes in high school, former athletes in college. And they say this time and time again, I wish I had this kind of training when I was in college, because I would have been so much better. I wish I would have had this kind of training when I was in high school, because maybe I wouldn't have had those injuries that I once did. Because we're not guaranteeing that you're not going to get an injury, but we can prevent as best as we can. There's better prevention ways here with the DVRT system than with your traditional models. Because here we are, we go into the weight room and everything is bilateral, everything is sagittal plane. I squat with both feet under my ground, both feet under my hips on the ground. I deadlift, both feet on the floor, both hands on the barbell. You know, there's a lot of things. And anything that I do that's less than the bench, so the squat or the deadlift, is kind of seen as a quote unquote auxiliary lift. It's kind of an accessory. It's not the main lift. So when I go do lunges, it's like, yeah, that's kind of like an extra exercise, but the squat is the big exercise that day. Where I will say that the lunge has more carryover on the field of play, on the court, wherever you are, than a bilateral squat. I don't think the squat is going to give you nearly what you need as a lunge would, because the lunge is teaching me how to resist planes of motion. So as I'm stepping back, it is sagittal plane. Yes, I'm going up and down, forward and backward, but I have to resist side-to-side motion because of the instability in my step. And that right there helps the core turn on, because I think in athletics, you don't need core exercises. Well, period. In general, nobody needs isolated core exercises. So everybody needs core exercises for sure, but those core exercises should be integrated through the exercises, through the movements that you're training in the gym. So you don't have to do, this is old school model. I'm just thinking about myself. You would do 45, 50, 60 minutes of your workout, and then you save the last 10 minutes for quote unquote core training, ab workout. So doing hyperextensions, doing the Superman exercise, doing ab crunches, doing oblique crunches, doing side bends, whatever, Russian twists, all these things that really, why? Why add that? And I don't think, well, there was no science to it at the time. It was just anecdotal. People that were saying, hey, this is what I do, and I've got six-pack abs. I've got strong core. This is what you should do. So it's like, oh, that's what I'm going to do. And the one thing that we have to make sure, too, obviously, is that the workouts need to be efficient. I think long are the days where you go to the weight room for 90 minutes to 2 hours. I remember those days. I didn't necessarily do it in season, of course. But I mean, I wanted to get the most out of my workout as I could. So I wanted to be there as long as I could, because I always thought, hey, that's how I'm going to build the muscle. But if you listen to Megan and I's podcast not too long ago about recovery, the weight room is a stimulus, but it's what you do after that that helps the growth if you're looking for muscle growth. So even if you're in college, and okay, yes, don't get me wrong, the more you lift, the more stimulus there is, you know, the bigger your weights are, the more stimulus there could be in the muscle. But I also vie for the fact that the more complex your movement is. So if I'm doing a squat, but I go to a lateral squat and I put a heavy bag on the one shoulder and I'm taking that squat over, so I'm moving in the frontal plane, I'm moving side to side, I'm resisting the rotation, so I have to resist something, that's going to actually have stimuli too. And of course, we're not in a position where we can convert, like, okay, your 405-pound squat would be the same as a 80-pound shoulder lateral squat. So there's no way to convert that. But because we're moving in a different plane of motion, this is going to create more adaptation, more demands, more adaptations. But even in like a college setting where we're trying to put maybe some more meat on some of the athletes, right? So you think about, I'm always just going back to football. I apologize, but that's kind of my sport. Is you get some of these athletes that come from high school, they go to college, and they need to put on like 10, 15, 20 pounds. So they hit the weight room. But where the magic's going to happen is obviously what's being served to them on the kitchen table, right? What are they putting into their bodies to help that growth? Because if I'm getting that stimulus, great, but if I'm not putting enough gas in the tank, I'm not going to get that. So then, yeah, that's why you see like all these athletes, man, they're not shy about going to the cafeteria and just loading up, but being smart about what we're doing. And then getting the right amount of sleep, all this stuff, which I think is funny because I know college, even if you're an athlete, yes, you still got to maintain your studies. But typically in college, you're not married, you don't have kids, you don't have any like big responsibilities. So going to bed on time, that could be a thing. And how that all helps promote recovery, regeneration, so that if your goal is to put on some size, you could do that. And you can easily do that with the DVRT system. And I of course, got to point over to one of our clients. And for any of our listeners who've been listening for a while, you know her, Shannon Amberg. She wanted to start putting on some mass. And we did everything DVRT-wise. But what she needed to change was her diet. She needed to talk to Megan. She needed to eat more. She needed to have more protein. She had to honor her body's hunger needs. And especially with the increase in intensity that we were offering in the weight room, there had to be a balance. And that was, you know, a few years ago. And as she found that balance, she started really thriving in her goals, that being so much stronger, putting on more mass, more muscle. Now, for a lot of people, that's not their goal. For your normal general population people, of course, that's not their goal. So our goal for them, as their goal would be, is to make sure that they move well, make sure that they can be as close to perfect in their movement patterns, that they're very resilient so that they can be free of injuries. And if injuries do occur, that it's not as big of a deal as it would have been without strength training. But we're talking sports performance, right? So we're not talking about general population. So as I mentioned in the beginning with the youth, you know, when the youth is at a certain age and they just want to play sports, have them just play sports. They don't need any strength training. I do believe that prepubescent kids can do strength training, but in the right way, in the correct way. As I mentioned, not being under load with a barbell, not just body weight exercises, ultimate sandbag exercises, adequate weighted kettlebell exercises, resistance band exercises, physical education kind of things, teaching kids how to move, physical education, teaching the physical. And then as they go through puberty, then yes, then we can start expanding their knowledge, expanding their words, right? So you think about a kid learning how to read. You know, they first have to learn the alphabet, then they have to learn phonics, putting things back together. All of a sudden now, sentences, paragraphs. So we can do this. We can have the young athletes become more movement literate. And the exercises that we're doing, as I mentioned earlier, are not mimicking the sport. What we're doing is we're thinking about athletics, and athletics, for every athlete, you have to learn how to move in one plane of motion while resisting other planes of motion. So just think, like, for anybody in a sport, whether it be baseball, basketball, football, how you have to make that lateral cut. So you plant one foot as you go, and you move your weight to the other side so you can change your direction. A lot of athletes, their knees aren't ready for that. So when they make that cut, when they plant that foot, and they're not stable, well, that knee buckles, and there's knee injuries, even in professional athletes where this happens. So body weight wise, I don't know. I kind of think like if an injury happens and it's non-contact, I think that could have been prevented. I think that was a weight room problem. Now, I could be wrong. And of course, if somebody's doing, you know, if they're making a cut and another player comes in and runs into them and it puts their knee out of commission, okay, well, that's something that could not necessarily been prevented through the weight room. But you become stronger, recovery process could be quicker. Just saying. So getting back to the movement literacy, again, after puberty, teaching more planes of motion. You don't have to get heavy with weight. And the thing is, especially for men. Now, for women, I've got my thoughts about female sports. I'm going to talk about that too. But for the male sports in high school, you know, I think a lot of these guys, like, I'm not sure about myself personally. I don't know if I actually put on a lot of muscle because of the weight room strictly. I was going through puberty, testosterone. I was very numerous. Like I had a high count of testosterone, as most men do as they go through puberty, that this helped my muscle growth. It wasn't just because I was working out. Did working out help? Yeah, of course. But it wasn't like the main factor. I would have probably put on some muscle anyway without the working out. So you see what I'm saying is like, to just say, hey, you need to hit the weight room because this is the only way that you're going to build muscle. No, but you need to make sure that that muscle and the strength that you're building now, even through puberty, can be expressed in a way that's very efficient in your movements. So that when you're making that cut side to side, when you're doing anything athletic, that you can do so with ease, gracefully. That right there is strength. That right there is power. Going to the female athletes, the female sports, here's what I want to say about that. I've worked with a lot of female athletes, and they're actually my favorites. I love working with female athletes. You know why? They're so much more driven. They will do whatever you ask them to do in the weight room. I mean, if you say this exercise is going to be great for you, they love the fact that they have this opportunity. This is what I found it before, because all the times, male sports usually trump all the other sports. So if you got the football program, that usually trumps women's basketball, women's cross country, women's volleyball. You know, when it comes to weight room and the programming is so much more geared for helping the football team. So I've worked with softball athletes. I've worked with cross country, you know, state track champions. I've worked with women's rugby. Very good. And I've also worked with female athletes here at Fitness Line Down now, high school athletes. And we're setting it up just how we set it up for everybody else, but we tune it in to their needs. Like, whoa, these females don't move very well. We're going to have to teach them first how to move well. We have to start building that vocabulary, that movement vocabulary. And the funny thing is as the athlete advances all the way up to the pros, you know, I'm going to tell you right now, professional athletes, now I know some professional athletes will come in and the goal is like, I want you to go from this position to this position in your sport. And that's going to require that you're going to have to put on 20 more pounds. Well, they'll do what they got to do to put on 20 pounds. I don't know if it's all legal, but they'll be the weight room. The food is on point. I mean, they're doing what they can because that's their sport. That's what they're getting paid for. But a lot of those athletes that get to the elite level now, the professional athletes, their main focus, and this I just learned from the Chicago Bulls, and it's totally true, is injury prevention. They're at an elite status. And even if, like, I think one of the funny things I heard before is if you got a baseball pitcher and they're throwing like 100 miles per hour, but they have a compensation in their movement pattern, you know, like the one shoulder is kind of jacked up higher than the other. You can just see the asymmetry in their body. And if you as a strength coach try to fix that asymmetry, you're going to compromise their fastball now. Their bodies, they've built their bodies up now to throw that 100 mile per hour fastball. That's their sport. That's what they're good at. And all the stuff that's going to happen afterwards, the wrists, the elbows, the shoulders, the low back problems that they're going to have, they did this for the sport. So to fix that, that's going to be one of the most erroneous things you could do as a strength coach at the elite level. You have athletes, that's what they do. What you need to make sure is that they don't get injured in their sport. So maintenance, building up some power, but nothing like, you know, I remember hearing in the NFL, most strength coaches don't have their athletes deadlift because the way that they would have to deadlift, the juice is not worth the squeeze. That is too much on their spine with a barbell, that they're just not ready for that. So instead of deadlifting, they'll do like hang clean. So what that means is that they have the barbell, they have the weights, they bring the barbell about mid-shin. Now it's not stuff that they would actually deadlift because that weight would be too heavy, but they explosively power clean it up. So they go from the mid-shin and they throw the barbell up. I mean, they never let go, but they extend through the hips, the bar comes around and they catch it up at the shoulders. That's the power clean. So that's how the coaches work with that. I think it would be more beneficial to use ultimate sandbags and do some like lateral power cleans, all this stuff where it's like, now we're working in those planes of motion that you've built up that movement pattern vocabulary, that now at that elite level, you're doing some of that stuff, sure, in the off season, but in the in season, guess what we have? We have all those restoration exercises, things that keep the athletes moving well. You know, you hear so many athletes that'll do yoga, we'll do all these other things, which I'm not going to poo-poo that, but how important it is to keep their body integrated, keep their body connected, using load as a means of feedback. So, I mean, my background is, yes, I am a certified strength conditioning specialist. I'm certified in that. That's what I know. But I've grown. And I just think the one thing that strength coaches, we can be some of the worst. We know our exercises that we like. We know the exercises that are traditional in our sports. Those are the ones that we go to. I heard one time the strength coach for the Indianapolis Colts, I don't think he's there anymore, actually was open to doing like Turkish get-ups with the kettlebell. Like that was one of the exercises he had. And that was like outside the box thinking for this group of people. But us on the other side of that box, we know like, wow, Turkish get-ups is a phenomenal exercise to teach strength, stability, coordination, patterning. I mean, what a great exercise. How much carryover that could have in the sport from being on your back to standing up in a series of movements. But it takes the professional athlete or professional strength coaches and any strength coach because they have that tunnel vision. They're not willing, and I get it. They're not willing to see another way to do it because they're afraid for their jobs. You know, if I do this and my athletes get injured doing it, this is what we know. This is what we've always done. And those can be some of the most dangerous words to say. So I just think like when it comes, especially collegiate athletes, if their movement vocabulary is where it needs to be, they shouldn't be doing things with both feet on the ground anymore. They should be doing things moving in different planes of motion, moving back and forth, moving side to side, standing on one leg. That single leg stability is so important. So that's my thoughts for today. Just kind of rambling a little bit, but I think you can tie that all in with how a DVRT is such a great way to build. And I'm excited to build my little athlete, my son, using that. Because as much as they're going to say, hey, I want your kid in the weight room, I'm like, hey, no, this is what I do. I know that they have a good gym here in town that takes care of the athletes at my son's school. And I thought what was really neat, I thought it was going to close, but I got one more thought, was that on their power day, max day, whatever you want to call it, I remember seeing videos on Facebook. And instead of doing barbell back squats, these coaches actually had the students doing front squats, which is so much better for the body. But the one thing about the front squat versus the back squat is that you can't lift as nearly as much weight. So I just thought that was great because that's being safe on the students. So I like where they're going with that. But at the same time, I want my kid to be doing what I know to be best. And I know that's going to help him with his movement vocabulary. Is he going to be a great athlete? Well, I don't know. There's a lot of genetic things that happen with this as well. That's a whole nother side. I did not get the genetic blessings when it comes to athleticism. I had to work for everything. I had to practice hard. I had to work hard in the weight room, and it all came to fruition. So yes, barbell training will work. That's good. But I take a page from Josh Henkin's book where it's like, hey, do you want to make $1 million in a day or do you want to make $1 million in 30 days? Whatever, how long the distance of time would be. And you're like, well, I want to make $1 million in one day because that seems to be more efficient. That's where I feel when it comes to DVRT strength training versus the other kind of strength training. Sure, you're going to get stronger using barbells, but is that strength going to be enough? No. Is it going to be preventative in other injuries because we're only working in the one plane of motion? Probably not. Am I going to get more bang for my buck working with the DVRT system? I absolutely believe 100% yes. All right, I'm going to let you go with that note. Again, very Merry Christmas to all of you out there. I am excited for, well, we still got, I think, one more podcast episode before the new year, but we got the new year coming up, got some great things lined up. So for all of you out there, until the next time, Godspeed.